What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we have a special treat. We have Grayson Russell. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, boss. What's going on, everybody?
We're hanging in there, man. How have you been? You've been keeping busy out there?
Good. Busy, but good. No busier than anybody else, but we're having a good time doing it.
Hell yeah, man. So in case anyone listen, he is an actor and a musician. You guys definitely know who he is, whether you know it or not. It's safe to say if you're my age. By the way, when I was researching your stuff today, I had no idea we were the same age, which is kind of crazy to think about for me. We're literally like days apart. And I was like, damn.
When's your birthday? Like,
May 6, 1998.
Oh, dude. Yeah, man. I just beat you. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of funny because, like, I grew up watching your stuff and we're the same age. It kind of gave me a little mind fuck for a minute.
But anyway,
in case anyone doesn't know, he was in Talladega Nights, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, another personal favorite of mine. But also, we're going to find out he is a musician, a songwriter, and we're going to hit on that. But I'd be remiss if we don't hit a bit on your acting career. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Just to talk about it for a bit, man. So I guess we'll start from the beginning a bit. Like, when you got started, was it something that you've always wanted to do since you were real young? Or, like, how'd you get into it?
No, not at all. My mom's an accountant. She's a partner in the firm she started in high school, and my dad's a contractor. I thought I was going to be a peach farmer. Not that I wanted to. I just figured that was, you know, what was really going to happen. Right. When I was two, I used to introduce myself as Grayson Paul Russell George Strait. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be George Strait. I wanted to be Chris Shivers. I wanted to ride bulls. That's what I wanted to do. Clanton, my hometown in Alabama's got 9,000 people in it. Like I said, most of them are peach farmers. I started doing commercials with a guy who went to high school mom, like the local car dealership. They'd use Varsity Cheer Squad. This wasn't a real, it wasn't a real prestigious name. And at some point, I guess I could probably, I don't know if I can turn 7 yet. Can you hear that going on in the background? That's not messing you up, is it?
No, I got you, man. You're good.
Okay, sweet. Cool. I gotta play the show. I gotta play the show tonight. Over here, past my operator.
Hell yeah.
A lady came in my mom's office and was like, hey, there's this newspaper, there's an article in the newspaper about this audition for some Will Ferrell movie. I think you should take Grayson to. I didn't know who Will Ferrell was. I think Elf had just come out. So, like, I don't know who it was. I couldn't read. I hadn't started second grade yet. You know, I could do like Cat, you know, Rat, Sat, Seath Park Run. That was it. You know, that was the extent of my intellect. And really what it came down to is my dad fished a lot of tournaments when I was little. And so dad went fishing and me and mom were bored. So we went to a high school in Birmingham and I auditioned for Talladega Nights. She kind of had to tell, like, I had to sound out, try my best to sound out, you know, like what I was supposed to say in this audition. And there was a couple thousand kids there. We were all auditioning for those two, the two boys.
Yeah.
And went in, auditioned. I want to say like 2 weeks later. My folks, keep in mind, didn't even think this was a real movie. Like, we had no idea what's going on. We just went literally because dad went fishing with them. And they called mom's office a couple of weeks later and said, hey, we want them to come up to Charlotte, North Carolina to audition again. And my folks almost didn't take me again because we didn't think it was a real movie, but also, like, what actual shot does this 7-year-old kid have?
Yeah.
You know, like,
right. Yeah.
That makes zero sense. And we went, and normally, like when you audition, and sorry, this is the long way around it, but normally when you audition, if you're in the room with somebody for 10 minutes, you're doing great. You know, you are making an impression. We walked in, instead of 2,000 kids, there was 30. And they all dwarfed me. They were all head and shoulders tall. And my folks didn't tell me this at the time, but they're like, I don't have a snowball's chance in hell because if they're auditioning for two brothers, well, evidently I'm not the look they're going for because I'm a person smaller than the rest of them.
Right.
And I went back there auditioning. It was in the rain with Will and Adam just for an hour. And they would just cycle the other kids through. And what we didn't realize was I had already been cast. And they were trying to match me to a brother.
Okay.
And so that's how I got into it. And after all was said and done, Michael Clark Duncan, the big guy from the Green Mile, John Collins.
Rest in peace. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew him. I knew him as I think Balthazar, Scorpion King. That's what I'm.
Yeah.
he set me up with his manager. And that's how I was able to stay. So that's how I was able to, you know, get a foot in the door in the film industry, because no one expected me to do Talladega Nights, much less like pursue it.
Yeah.
But we understood, like, okay, this is such a thing straight from the good Lord that there's no, like, there's no way we can deny that I'm supposed to be doing this.
Yeah.
Or at least this particular project. You couldn't really, you couldn't deny it, you know, because that doesn't happen now. It really didn't happen then.
Yeah.
And that was all the good Lord got saved doing that movie. My whole life kind of, you know, went on a trajectory that I never could have called. You know, to the point that I don't really don't remember, you know, much of my life. I do, but it's hard to imagine, you know, what my life would have been without it. I'm sure it would have been, you know, wonderful, I hope. But that's how I got into it. It was an entirely by
mistake. Yeah, and it's hard to rule out that, like, God had something to do with that. And that kind, you know, and that kind of, snowball's chance in hell, man. Like, that's crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, my whole life has been that way up to this point. You know, for me, the things that I struggle with the most are the things that I feel like I control. I can control. You know, you stick me in a position where I feel like I've got, you know, I know what's going on and can do it, dude. I'll screw the pooch 100% of the time. But you say, okay, you've got to pick the family up and move to Vancouver for 2.5 months for the next 3 years to go do Wimpy Kid. No problem. That's bigger than, you know,
right.
That's bigger than, and that's a blessing. That's a blessing that, you know, that mindset kind of got kicked off for me really early on. Because I think it would have been far more difficult, you know, to be an adult, try to, you know, operate the same.
Sure. And so, like, being that young, like, on such a big movie like Talladega Nights, and even after that, going into Wimpy Kid and whatever it was, you know, like, the following projects you were in, was it intimidating as, like, a young star to go through that? Or did you have to, like, you feel like you're growing up kind of fast for your age?
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, I was raised, so my granddad was the youngest of six. And while my folks would go to work, I would either be with my grandparents or with Bertha, Ethel, or Inez, the older sisters. So I was an old soul anyway, going into it. I mean, I started traveling, doing Southern Gospel with my folks when I was five. And then when I was seven, right before Talladega Nights kicked off, I had a band that sang solely Bee Gees music.
Oh,
so
nice.
I was already seven going on 70. You know, going into which helped them, because I mean, I'm an only child, so I spent more time with literally elderly people most of my life than I did with anybody my age. So that you know, inadvertently, that kind of gave me, I think, a leg up to it. Had to grow up fast for sure, because that was an absolute, you know, sink or swim. By the grace of God, I wasn't intimidated by Will or Adam or John. Of course, everybody had a crush on Leslie Bibb, but that was, you know, that was the extent of me being inhibited on, you know, Talladega Nights, because I was ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it was like, that's the dip, that is the example of ignorance is bliss, because I didn't know to be nervous. You know, like I said, I had kind of known him as Buddy from Elf. But my folks, you know, didn't really, I guess they watched SNL. But I mean, Lord, that was after my bedtime. And, you know, I had never seen Anchorman. I remember my folks sitting me down and trying to, like, watch Anchorman with me, like, bits and pieces on TV, you know, pre-DVR, trying to find it, you know. Or we might have gone to Blockbuster so we could kind of, so I could figure out what was going on. But I mean, there's only so much a child can do.
Yeah.
So, in that environment, I don't remember being feeling intimidated at all, feeling nervous or underwhelmed, which ended up being my saving grace. If I had had the wherewithal to know what was going on, I probably absolutely would have watched it.
Right. Gotcha. So, like, when you, in the following years, after Talladega Nights came out and everything, like, it, like, there's no other way to put it, man. It's like a part of popular culture, especially the scenes that you were in. And like, do you do you like recall that moment or any moments when you're like, wow, I was a part of something that's like bigger than what I could have ever thought of?
It always hits in really different ways. That's always manifested itself in kind of different pieces and points across my life. Obviously in the moment I had no idea it would, you know, have the cultural impact that it did. The first time that it really kind of was like, oh, this really does mean something to people in a way that I understood was I did my undergrad is in film.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember working on like a short film, you know, I had to do for a class, and I was with, we all like piled in to like one of the faculty's cars to come back from wherever the location was. And I remember him looking over and saying, hey, what's it like to have, you know, one of the most quoted lines in popular culture, you know, turned center American Tommy.
Yeah.
That was different for me. That was when I was like, oh, this might be, you know, I knew that it was big. I knew the impact that it had, but that was the first time that I think it really had something on me. You know, I remember sitting in like in classes in film school where they're talking about product placement. And the slide had been in the curriculum for the past 5 years was the dinner table scene from Talladega.
Oh yeah.
And that's just on a purely academic level with my band. We're playing a show this weekend for, it was 40,000 people, which is the biggest show we'll play all year. We're opening for a guy named Zach Williams. And we did a meet and greet afterwards, and one of the staff came up, and I had met this guy at the same event a couple of years prior, and he said, man, I never told you this, but when I was in the Army, when I was getting, like, the day I was getting on the plane to deploy to Afghanistan, he said I was nervous. I was obviously, you know, rethinking my entire life at this point. Why the hell did I decide to be with this? There's a war going on, and I just signed up. You know, boot camp's cool and all, but holy shit, here I am.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that right before I got on the AC-130 to go, they said, hey, can you babysit this like little munitions depot for a minute?
Yeah.
And he said, I walked in and it was skitzing and all. And he said, I looked up and Talladega. And he said, that was my family's favorite thing. He's like, that's what we always watched.
Yeah. That's incredible.
And that was the piece that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I'm not that far from home.
Wow.
He said that was the little push, just a little bit of peace that I needed.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have called that as a 7-year-old. He told me that's Friday.
Man.
You know, and we're almost pushing 20 years since I filmed it.
Man.
So there's been bits, you know, things like that, you know, through my whole life. You know, when I was doing, right before I did Wimpy Kid, I did, this was the first time I was ever, here's your story, the first time I was ever starstruck in my life. I was doing a Disney XD episode of a show called I'm in the Band. It ran for like 2 seasons.
Wow, I remember that.
And I'm doing a pilot episode. I had auditioned for Fregley and didn't get it.
Oh, no.
I auditioned for Wimpy Kid, didn't get it. And happened to be in LA and was doing this XD show. And I don't, first of all, when they say it was filmed in front of a live audience, 100% in front of a live audience, there was probably, you know, there might be 300 people there. So I'm already terrified enough as a 11-year-old.
Yeah.
So I remember, you know, walking in, because how sitcoms are set up, the sets are kind of linear. So you've got the, you know, I would be sitting in the audience and all the stages would be, all the sets would be lined up in front of you, so you can just literally take the cameras and ride through in front of all of them.
Yeah.
So I walk in, because I come in and do this little bit part, so I come in and do my thing, and I turn, and of course you see the 400 people there, but as I go to look up, I didn't realize that it was customary for all the other Disney shows to come watch you film your first episode.
Oh, wow.
So on the jump, as an 11-year-old, I might have been 10, well, there's Dylan, Cole, Brenda, Phil, Doc, Sean, Debbie, Ryan all standing there because we have conjoined studios with Suite Life on deck.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, like, I might as well be, you know, Patty Mahomes here, you know, like, crap brick.
Yeah.
And so do my thing, get done. And the film is still going. I'm just not in the scene there doing it. And I remember sitting on this little push cart with Debbie Ryan, just, you know, like, heartthrob. Just barely trying to hold together. And she figured out who I was relative to Talladega Nights because we hadn't known the kid yet. And her eyes got about that big around, and she pulled out her flip phone, and the spider monkey line was her ringtone.
Oh, my God.
And so that was, to me, I was like, all right, I can die happy, man. I can get creamed by this bus out here coming off the back lot. We're good. Dude, I got my money's worth out of this lot as an 11-year-old. Debbie Ryan's, you know, got my line is her ringtone. Then, of course, you know, I got home, went to public school, dude. I graduated with the kids I went to preschool with when I was 2. My teachers were either my mom's teachers and went to school with my grandma or went to school with my mom. Of course, I got back and told them that. Nobody cared. But, you know, I think that's really the only reason, I think, why I've made it thus far, you know, with half of, you know, with half of the head on my shoulders, you know, best I can tell, relative to a lot of people that came up in the same position, is because nobody, it wasn't a big deal to them.
Okay.
You know, like it was if I was around my buddies and we were all somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if I went on vacation to Disney World with my best friends, you know, and we got out there and then they saw, well, that's Regler, that's a kid from Talladega Nights, then it was cool.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a day-to-day just worshiping the ground I walked on. And
sure.
And that was absolutely, and not that that's something I wanted. You know, that wasn't something I was asking for, but
yeah.
Because there's few things worse than going to public school in Alabama and playing Fregley at the same time. You know, like that's just, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. You know, that's not a fate. You know, I wanted to see
your secret freckle and all that.
Yeah. So it's just, no, that's not the way to go. That is social suicide for sure. Anyway, sorry, you're talking about being intimidated. That was the, or not being intimidated, but me realizing the impact that it's had over, you know, just how honest over the years. It's something new every day, which is cool. I mean, it really is a blessing. I get to a TV show called Blue Ridge. And it was the first time I had been back in Charlotte in 17 years since doing it.
Yeah.
And I went over to the church where I got saved, which was wild being back there. Cause like the building that I was in, it was like the overflow room. Cause we got there late, like coming on 2 wheels, you know, families practically cussing each other out in the parking lot. Cause we're getting to church late. You know, of course that's the day. And like it's the children's church now, which is cool. But I remember going back to the hotel where we stayed. Like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go back over there. You know, when you're a kid, you remember weird things.
Sure.
And I remember there being a little bald-headed black man that worked there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I really remembered about the hotel. Because, you know, it's weird when you're a child and you literally go, okay, now you're going to move away from home for 2 months as a 7-year-old. You and your mom are going to go live somewhere else.
Yeah.
And just around a whole totally new group of people. And as God is my witness, I walked in, you know, look at kind of things I remember, what parts have changed inside the hotel. And I turn and look down the hallway, and here comes this little old black man.
Wow.
I come to find out Greg's his name, was about to celebrate 20 years working at that.
Man.
He cried and I cried. And he pulled me back into the little laundry room, picture of him in Houston, one of the ladies that was working there. That you can see, well, I mean, it was a physical picture that they had pinned up on the corkboard that had been torn and they put back together with scotch tape.
Oh, wow.
That had been there for, at this point, 16 years. So there's stuff like that, you know, that hits you different.
Brings you back.
It's the equivalent of maybe, you know, if you went to play pro ball and, you know, you became a professional baseball player and you were able, you know, for the first time in 20 years, go back to the Little League field, you hit your first home run.
Right. That's incredible.
And, the,
man.
And like the umpire still being there.
Yeah.
Or like going back to like your childhood home that you hadn't been to in 20 years and neighbors still being
there. Yeah, man. Wow.
So Talladega Nights hits. Mm-hmm. And it hits me in ways that I don't expect. And that's, 20 years ago. I'm just happy it's still, it's still relevant. People still get a kick out of it.
For sure, man. And that's incredible, first off. I couldn't imagine that feeling, especially seeing him again. That's nuts.
Yeah.
But one more question about the acting, then I want to dive into your music, man. This is just kind of something I was thinking of today. Because you started, acting as a kid, as a child. And, of course, you hit on it a bit, I think. But, you hear, the stigma all the time about these, child actors. And, they use – a lot of the times they don't turn out too good. But God – thank God you did. But you hear about all these other guys and gals who've gone through it. Do you think there's a cause you could pinpoint for that? Is it
there's all kinds of stuff. It's different for everybody. Mm-hmm. Talladega Nights was the most professionally protective set I've ever been on. If there was ever an instance, cause I didn't want to cuss in it. That was my big testimony out of that was, I said, hey, is it all right? Do I really have to say all this? They said, man, you never have to say anything you're not comfortable with. They gave all the language to Houston, who played my brother. He mm-hmm. was 13 playing 10. He let it rip. And all I said was pissed the whole movie. anytime Will or Adam or somebody would make up something and say that was remotely profane, the whole set would shut down.
Okay.
And there would literally be a parade of people coming through to apologize to me and my mother for putting me in a position that compromised what I believed as a 7-year-old child,
mm-hmm.
Which looking back on it, I mean, is that's all the good Lord, but that's just amazing that they took the time to do that. But what it amounts to is when you have a $100 million movie, or you have you got Wimpy Kid, you got a $20 million movie going on. And this isn't about anybody, Wimpy Kid. This is just a off the wall. You've got a $20 million movie going on, and you got a kid that your whole thing is riding. You got $5 million riding on that kid doing something that day, and that kid doesn't want to eat lunch, and isn't going to come out of his trailer until he gets a fish sandwich from McDonald's.
Yeah,
you're getting that young and a fish sandwich from McDonald's.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's going to happen, 100%. If that child asked for a stripper, guess what's going to show up at that door? A stripper.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, and that's, I know those are two wild different examples, and those are not ones that happened at all. Those are not true. Mm-hmm. But that's the environment that after a while you become accustomed to.
Yeah.
But because it is necessary for the production to continue.
Okay.
For me, I remember I wanted a fish sandwich for lunch that day because I didn't, and I can't remember if it was I think it might have been Talladega Nights. Not being a pretentious ass, mm-hmm. I was just a 7-year-old that would have rather had McDonald's than whatever chicken there was there.
Sure.
And my folks were like, no, you're going to eat what's there. No different than anybody else's folks would be. No, nobody's going to get any McDonald's, and you're going to eat what's right there. Well, probably what amounted to maybe a 19-year-old PA heard me say that. And in 15 minutes, every variant of the McDonald's menu showed up, materialized.
Wow.
Partly out of kindness. Mm-hmm. I wasn't Texas Ranger in real life by any means. Partly out of necessity to keep the actors happy. It's the childhood equivalent of, okay, well, you're doing a film with so-and-so, and they're not going to come out of their trailer unless you give them 10 grand in cash right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not going to. That's part of it. And then the moment that all that gets taken away from you, because, okay, you feel like you are above everything. And then, you get a DUI, and now you lose your show. Or you say something, or you get canceled for something you said when you were, 14, and then all that gets taken away from you.
Yep.
No one.
Mm-hmm.
No one, dude. And that's what I'm saying for me, my saving grace, has been, nobody thought it was you know, really cool.
Right.
And I went back to public school.
Yeah.
You know,
they kept you grounded. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did Wimpy Kids for 2.5 months at a time. And I mean, I want to say I did. And also what helped me too is, so I've done 12 features. The last one we got nominated for an Oscar, it was a World War II film with Tom Hanks called Greyhound. Yeah. And, out of the 12 films I've done, 9 of them was before I was 18. So my mom had to be there with me. She was required to be within sight or sound of me at all times. And I don't mean to really be getting in the weeds of all the mechanics here. But I couldn't get away from my mom if I wanted to. And you better believe there's some friggin' times as a 14, 15 year old, you know, that like, I have no desire. You know, I'm 17 working on a movie with Julia Roberts and Olivia Wilde over here. You better friggin' believe I do not want to be standing here by my mother.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
But, and I'm not saying that set was, you know, that set wasn't heinous at all. It's a very, very kind shoot. Well, that's a movie called Mother's Day. That's with Jennifer Aniston, Jason Sudeikis. Yeah. I mean, my mom had to be there, and she was dedicated at being there. That's the only reason.
Awesome, man. Awesome. But it's good to see you came out in good shape and everything. You know, not another horror story from Hollywood.
Yeah. No, not a bit.
But let's dive into your music, man.
Yeah,
I was very excited to learn that you were doing that now. I can't wait to hear what's to come and everything. But I guess let's start at what got you started in the songwriting, wanting to pursue music as a whole?
So I have toured to some extent since I was 5.
Okay.
So I started traveling, doing Southern gospel with my folks, which was 2 years before Talladega Nights. So I started singing by myself places when I was 3. And then, like I said, I fell in love with the Bee Gees of all bands.
They're awesome, man. This was after
falling in love with George Strait. I've been a member of the George Strait fan club since I was 2 years old.
Oh, wow.
I credit it to the fact that on the Pure Country soundtrack, there is a child singing on the Heartland. Sing a song about the Heartland. And, you know, as a three-year-old, I figured, okay, well, that kid's doing it. I can do it.
Sure.
So had my first band, it was mine in the second grade. When I was 7, it was all my fellow second graders. So, of course, you know, I'm doing Talladega Nights and Will Ferrell and Adam McKay, all of them get a really big kick out of it. They would make up like these long lost Bee Gees songs. Be like, I'm Larry Gibb, the fourth brother, and, you know, make up these Bee Gees songs. And so I traveled. My Bee Gees band never played anywhere. We disbanded before we could play any shows, but I did have rehearsals like every weekend I could. We would sing karaoke. You know, it's pretty strict.
Heck yeah.
And I started playing guitar in the 6th grade. So that's when it was like all the rock stuff kind of came in my life, like any other kid. Guitar here was out at the same time. So it was perfect. And then I started leading worship. Might as well have been on staff in the 7th grade. And I did that for 9 years up through my undergrad. So playing at least once a week, if not twice, for the better part of 9 years. Put together my band, so it's just Grayson Russell. It's more or less a Southern rock group. 7 years ago, out of college, or while I was in college at Lee, which is a music school. So I got a film degree from a music school, so I could. I mean, it was a perfect storm for me. I could have all the, you know, at arm's length, all the musical talent that I wanted to get. Personally, it was just you know, keyboard players, drums, and whatever, you know, in my vicinity to learn. And also, you know, I can learn all the things going on, you know, with film that I've seen done, but never did because I was asked. And it started out as a cover band. So we played every little coffee shop and frat party and everything, you know, that we could for nothing, literally nothing.
Yeah.
And there was I remember I was riding taxi. We called the forum. And I was probably a junior in college, maybe. I might have been a senior cover band. And I very vividly remember going, there is no reason I would ever want to play this. Like, why would anybody want to do it? There is no one that is going to get any more of a kick out of something I can rock than Freebird.
Right.
Than LaGrange. Than Tim Grover and Little Kid. Like, so why not just give them what they want to start with? Why do I have to remember? because, you know, the flip side of that was, you know, I had all these music, not all of them, you know, a handful of musicians, you know, that went to school and it was savants. It was like, it's horrible. And I'm like, okay, well, my God, you got a degree in this? And that's what you come up with? There's no point in me starting. There was no, you know, because it didn't make sense to me. And over COVID, I think I was moved enough by just the hell that was COVID and politics and the whole world at that point in time, too, right? And it was, it had been a song called When We Got 15 Minutes Done. It was like, wait, but that doesn't suck. And I don't know where that came from. Okay. And so I never released it, but I went and cut it, and, you know, and I did my time in the studio. I sang on my dad's album for the first time when I was 6. Did another album with him when I was 8. I did my first solo album when I was 15. It was all Christian stuff. We had like the drummer from Rascal Flatts, Jim Riley played. Yeah. Will Dowdy was playing keys for Poison at the time he played. So I've grown up in and around studio and studio musicians. But that was the first time I put together something that was my own. And, you know, another heartbreak or two later, I figured out that I could take something that I was walking through and pin it in a way that landed on people.
Right.
And put it out there in a way that was entertaining, but that people got a kick out of. And meant something to them.
Yeah.
Because it's something like, I've never been a particularly emotional person, but to play a song that you've written and watch somebody else, or watch somebody else break down, or watch a, you know, hell yeah, brother. You know, it's different. It lands differently on you. And started playing utility for a guy who won a couple Grammys back in the day doing gospel music. So I play mandolin and banjo acoustic, same with him. I've done it for the last one on maybe 3 years.
Okay.
But it got to a point where I realized, okay, well, if we're going to do these originals, we need to lean into them. And so we workshopped them as far as playing them at gigs for, you know, 2-3 years around Nashville, around the Southeast. And I ended up making friends with the lead singer from Mercy Me and Mercy Me's crew. And they said, hey, we just bought Motley Crue's old house and dropped a studio in. Y'all come in and cut what you want. And so fast forward 14 years from Will Ferrell going, hey, you want to hear a long speed song that he made up, pulled out of his ass. I was playing a show at Johnny Cash's farm in Bonnock when I did was in the audience. He said, my name's Scott Blaise, well, you know me. Next 4 hours for business. And I want to do all your stuff.
Wow.
I want to do all your stuff. And I go over and sit and eat steaks with him and his wife and see Sam and looks over at 14 years removed. He goes, hey man, if you want to hear some never before heard BG song.
Oh.
And proceeds to play me their demos from when they're in the basement trying to figure out a song that I've known my whole life, and you realize that the tempo to one and the melody is entirely different from what's actually on the track, or you hear, you know, what Barry Gibb sounds like, you know, dicking around in his basement trying to figure out what line he's going to sing.
Yeah.
And I walked out in the yard and called mom and bawled my eyes out, bawled like a child. You know, because what are the odds of that? You know, the good Lord just winking.
Yeah.
These are the plans I have for you.
The stars connected, man. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we get ready to cut the album. And I realized pretty early on, okay, I can do all the covers in the world. We can do covers like nobody's business. I mean, we would do everything from Billie Jean to Grundy County Auction to Dave Matthews. It didn't matter. Did not matter. We usually sound check to LaGrange because we can layer all our guys in if we get a, you know, screw sound check. But I knew that, you know, okay, you know, I've had kind of rocks thrown at me my whole life for, you know, the film background. I've done music my whole life, but not, you know, at the level of recognition that film has. Mm-hmm. And I knew, and I've known, okay, if I want to be taken seriously here, I've got to check every damn box I can get a hold of. I've played the Nashville Palace rivalry where Randy Travis started out over here washing dishes probably 6 times in the past 2 months. Getting ready to play Whiskey Jam probably in a couple months here. Said I played for a Grammy winner. Just trying to check off every box. And the biggest one being, I'm going to write the whole album.
Yeah.
Not going to have any help. And that's not out of pride. it's just I've had a dozen different heartbreaks between now and then, and I've got enough friggin' ammo to write a damn album.
Yeah.
So I wrote one. And it's called Living in Women, Volume 1, because whenever my band would get ready to pray before a set, whether we were playing on Broadway, whether we were playing at a stadium or an arena, the general prayer request was living in women. Mm-hmm. What's going on? What you need prayer for? Just living in women. And so that's the title of that's the title of the album. And it covers probably about 3 or 4 different, relationships I've had. Good, bad, ugly. I mean, me and Dad recorded I Can Only Imagine On There Again, which is the first song I did with him when I was 5. Keep in mind, we get the recording at Mercy Me studio.
Yeah.
Called the Imagine House. So that's another, that's another circle. That's another check. I just played Live Oak last week. Played it twice. Played it 2 days ago.
I love Live Oak.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, that was a big one because I played Listening Room, not here, but one in Pigeon Forge. Just trying to check those boxes because I want, when this thing comes out, that people understand that this is what I've always wanted. I'm not giving up. I'm not giving up. I'm going to season 2 on a TV show in September. But this is what I've always wanted my whole life.
Yeah.
And I have done it my whole life. It's just now. The wherewithal. I've done a pretty good job paying dues at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not going to be just because somebody wanted some, gives me a shot at something that they didn't earn. Like, I'm not coming up because I did some really cool on TikTok with somebody. We're in the line dancing pub, Nashville Palace back room, sitting here having a podcast. It's not from a home studio with a ring light. This is what I've always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of, okay, well, I'd like to play Wembley before I'm 40 because I'm sure my body's not going to be able to hold up as much as I would like it to. Look, I eat too bad to be
most people.
that ain't as hard as me. I'd love to be doing it, except, this is what I want to do this month. This isn't just something I've decided to do. And now it's time for me to focus on things that want to have backup plans. I got a master's in clinical mental health counseling because I did so much work with actors on set, so I didn't want to screw up.
Yeah.
Now it'll be something that I'll carry on. Musicians and bands here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah.
But this is what I want to do. I'm doing everything I can. And that it's genuinely earned, talking about it.
And you, especially in your situation, man, you hit a good point there. You're not just getting it handed to you because you're, like you put it, like a Disney kid or anything. Because, like I said, I just rediscovered you through your music. And I was like, wait, he's also the guy who did that. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just lip service. Like, you really are working your ass off. And it's really cool to see. Do you think being in a place like Nashville has helped significantly more than if you would have been at any other area right now trying to make music?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The people that you run into here absolutely push you to be better. Like, the thing that I love and hate about Ride Arounds is looking at his arm and you realize, shit, I got to work for this one. Like, I got to work for this one. And it makes me be better, because I've been blessed that, I lived geographically at Cable, taking it through everything this was. And I've maxed out every opportunity that I had in this place. Planting 9,000 people at home to Cleveland, Tennessee, with a music school that Rascal Flatts and Creed and Little Big Town came out of. Here on Nashville, it's going to take a whole lot longer to do, but that's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Absolutely what I'm here for. It's how they're not absolutely opens a lot of doors. Wimpy Kid opens a lot of doors. I mean, there's not a ton of people out here planting. So those help. People to pay a little more attention to, for sure. Absolutely. I'm not denying that I got a coattail to ride like hell.
But you got to make them stay.
But it's not going to be for lack of work on my end to keep them there. And it's funny because there's a Grayson Russell that's already out on Apple Music. I haven't got anything out yet. So it's funny because it'd be like, I gotta make a distinction because it's two entirely different styles. All of our stuff will be dropping probably September, October, November. And then tour till the cows come home. I'm not here to just SoundCloud.
Right. Yeah, man. That's awesome. You're ready to kick some butt, man. That's awesome to hear. So I guess, yeah, you kind of just hit it on there. If you want to reiterate, what do you got coming down the pipe, man, so people could look out for?
Yeah, so right now, I'm mixing this freaking album. I'm mixing Living and Women Volume 1. We're about to wrap up a song called Corn and Kerosene, which is literally my great granddad ran liquor after his wife died, and my granddad on the other side sold drugs in his free time. And comparing that with some of the strange things that you might have to do that I've had to do, you know, to be sure my guys are paid and taken care of all of this dream here. Because it ain't cheap. You know, you don't make a thing. You're there because you want to be there. Because you want to be able to. Okay, hey, we're just this week or last week and let's figure out how it ends.
Yeah.
The thing for me is there's no album or there's not a song on there that's the best or worst I haven't expressly walked through myself.
Yeah.
Which is part of the reason, you know, okay, getting in and starting to co-write is new for me. Just because I'm used to, you know, writing about something that, like I said, I've expressly walked through and not that I'm protective of that. It's just that I can't write about something that, or at least not well, that I haven't been in the middle of. I think it's a disservice to people who I perceive, you know, who are in the middle of the situation. So, we shall see. But right now, I'm mixing the album. We'll probably start dropping stuff. There's a lot of content sheets right now. So it's in the weeds of podcasts, which I love talking. So this is fun. This is cool. I love doing this.
Good.
But I hate editing reels. I would rather cut off appendages than edit reels.
Tough, man. They're tough.
Yeah. I can't stand to edit reels. Working on that. Might end up doing some stuff. I produced two singles for Zach Gordon, who played Dragon, if you can. So might look into doing some stuff with Zach right now.
Oh, nice.
I've got my head down, nose to the freaking ground, so I'm trying to be sure that I'm established enough here in Nashville, because once September hits and I start season two of Blue Ridge, provided we're solid to go for that, I'm locked in Charlotte for 12 weeks. I've got to get all my content stuff shot now. I've got to get all my stuff ready to drop done now so that we can start, you know, we can start releasing. So that is a headache in my head. But it's my headache to mention my before. And even with action, if I never do another film again, I've been able to hit a level. And I think that this kind of maybe my answer to the challenge. Screwball question. I've been able to hit level with Talladega and that most people don't get to do once, much less three times. And if they do, their parents aren't around, their grandparents certainly aren't around to see them do it. The people who have supported the starving artist for their whole life aren't here to see them hit it. You're Morgan Freeman's age doing Driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah.
58, 60.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I've been able to do that. I've been able to do that. I've got my money's worth out of this one.
Sure.
If I get on there and get creamed by the friggin' liquor trial with people with the friggin' table.
Yeah, the pedal wagon.
Dude, if I get smoked by a thing, somebody write a song about it. I've got my money's worth out of it, you know? I have nothing to complain about. The opportunities and the privileges I've had in this life. Some that I earned, some that was blatantly the good Lord put in my lap. And I'm not going to deny that they were good to me. And for me, it's with music, I want it like in film too. But right now, being in this environment, man, I want to play this freaking ride around, drink water.
Yeah,
like it's a physical emotion, animal in itself.
Yeah,
and I've never needed something like I've felt the need for this. It's just feel like I'm not there.
Yeah, man.
We'll see. Could be wrong. But
I don't think you're on the right track, man. This is exciting. You're getting me pumped up over here.
Yeah, we'll do it. Good. I hope so, dude. It's gonna be fast and loud. I tell everybody that asks me what we sound like. We've grown up playing Christian music all our lives, so it sounds a little bit like you too. But mm-hmm. It's really just sounds like if you stuck Lynyrd Skynyrd and ZZ Top, slam some harmonies on top of them, and cross them with some swells from you too every now and then. That's what we sound like. It's my life. I'm trying to put it into a song. Try.
Heck yeah, man. Before we get out of here, you guys got any cool shows coming up? Any like tour dates? What you got going on with shows?
I think there's I've got it on my website. That's a thing I probably need to plug. It's just Gracing Muscle, GrayssonRussell, so two S's, two L's, online.com. That's got all my dates on there. I didn't know about this until yesterday, so some stuff won't be on there. I know we're playing. We've got a festival back in September. We're playing with Athens. It's a big one. It's a festival. But right now, man, it's nose to the grind. There's some stuff I can talk about. We talked to a couple of these 90s bands about opening for them that all their whole life. So that's really cool. So we're getting some traction there. But Grayson Russell Online, that's kind of scary. If you can't sign it there, if whoever's out there listening, followers mean more than any amount of money does at this point for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look mine, if you want to see all the craziness that I get to, I severed my thumb on the snapping turtle in college.
Oh shit!
Tables, bathtubs, all the craziness that my life. Y'all come over and at least spectate. All those are Grayson C. Russell, yeah. So GrayssonRussell, capital C, Russell, Russell. Y'all come on, I'd appreciate it. This is so cool. Thank you for having me. Because
absolutely,
I knew of Rowdy and raised Rowdy that whole deal because I had a buddy who's from Cleveland, Tennessee, where I did my undergrad, and Josh Kaiser, come through the pipeline.
Oh, yeah.
Come through the Rowdy pipeline. And it was funny because he was about a year or two ahead of where I was.
Okay.
And like Rowdy has been one of those boxes that I've wanted to check. I'm sorry, I should have said that to start with, because it's something that I really respect Josh. I know he's in Florida now, down in the Keys, doing some friggin' work.
Mm-hmm.
And he was somebody that I really, really respected what he was doing and how he was doing it. And also, he was somebody from the school that I was in my undergrad at. So I'm like, okay, that's doable. That is not time sky. Like, okay, that can be done. I'll watch his stuff like a friggin' hawk, dude. And just saw everything that he was able to do and through and in conjunction with Rowdy. So this is really cool. It was like, holy crap, Rowdy's in my in my DMs over here, man. So that means a lot to me because I know that I am new to this side. I just appreciate the opportunity to come here and talk because it means a lot to me. It's no different than Lava. Getting to play Live Oak's been on there for probably 3 years. No different than Rowdy. Probably all kind of came at the same time. Stuff might seem a little better for you.
I appreciate you, Grayson, for hopping on. I tell you what, I'm not kidding. This was pretty inspiring talking to you today. That was like you're a good guy with your head on your shoulders. And like from what I've heard from the socials and stuff with your music, I can't wait, man. I can't wait for that album to drop. I can't wait to hear what's coming. So I appreciate you hopping on. And also, everyone, you heard the man. Check him out on all his socials, his website. Also, check out Rage Rowdy and Rowdy Alternative.
Yeah, buddy.
Google us. You'll find us. I don't even know all the damn URLs. You can find out yourself.
Yes, it's not as bad as Barstool, man. There's a blue million of them. Y'all got it going on.
Oh, yeah. I hope so. But thanks a lot, man. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see y'all next time.
Thank y'all. Y'all take care. My boots would look good on your bed. And I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night. So why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight? Try to make a mess of this simple